welcome to Check It Out, Comrade, a podcast where we bring you two games by the people for the people and tell you what we like about them. I'm Nick Lauber.
And I'm Gary Butterfield.
And that was my first attempt to change up that intro.
Good job,
a bit.
Buddy.
Yeah, that works,
good
right?
Job.
That sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
This week we're doing They Bleed Pixels and Oxenfree.
Indeed we are. Yeah. So let's get into it.
Absolutely.
They Bleed Pixels.
They Bleed Pixels.
Yeah, this is a game developed by Spooky Squid Games.
Mm-hmm.
And this is an old one.
A very old one, yeah.
Yeah, this came out August 29th, 2012, but there's no rule against that.
Mm-mm. And at the time of us releasing this episode, it will be the fall sale, where it is on sale on Steam for $2.
Yeah, super cheap. This is something that was recommended in Slack. Slack has been an invaluable resource for getting recommendations.
Absolutely.
And stuff. And Nick, what is, tell me about They Bleed Pixels. What's cool about They Bleed Pixels?
So They Bleed Pixels is a platformer, and it is definitely of the like flow variety. It's got some pretty tight controls. It feels, you know, it's kind of got that that Meat Boy feel to it, but it also has combat. And the combat emphasizes sort of combos and chaining together attacks and stuff, which makes this game, I feel, probably incredibly fun to watch. So people who are really good at this game are probably incredibly fun to watch, and I will probably go back and find I'm pretty sure it was in last year's one of the GDQs last year. But yeah, it has a very big emphasis towards that, which isn't quite for me. I mean, even Meat Boy, you know, with the Meat Boy is kind of the perfect indie platformer. It's all just tight controls and nothing else there. This takes a little more on top of that, and it still doesn't quite grab me to the extent that it would other people, I think.
Yeah, this is a real good example of something that I think is probably pretty good that's not for me as well. And it's similar, so that Meat Boy or N Plus,
yeah, or kind of Dust Force. Kind of, have you ever seen Dust Force?
I've seen it, but I haven't played it.
Yeah, a lot of these games that kind of emphasize kind of the perfect run, right?
Sure, like wall jumps.
Mm-hmm.
This kind of really tight platforming stuff, which I actually like, I dig that. One of the things about at least N Plus and Meat Boy, though, is you're pretty zoomed out.
Mm-hmm.
So it becomes kind of about planning this run. This kind of is a weird, I think this is a kind of those two types of games that aren't married perfectly. Like they're not, it's not a dumpster fire,
right?
But like they don't. So like being this close, you're pretty close up in this.
Yeah.
So there are times where like there are a couple of leaps of faith I had to make. Which I think is, you know, in that kind of thing, like then it's trial and error. Like then it's, oh, I leapt and fell and I got killed by these spikes. So now I'm going to try this again, knowing that information. Like you don't have complete information.
Right.
As opposed to something like Meat Boy or N Plus, where it's like, oh, I can see the entire stage.
Yeah, exactly.
Right from the beginning, which I think is good. And the combat I actually think is pretty great.
Yeah. The combat's the fun part about this for sure.
It's very simple. Like it's you have a very limited move set, but within that move set, you can do a lot of like kind of cool juggles. Like it feels really good.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in the kind of fiction of the game, the way it describes it to you is that like you can just go up to these guys and hit them. But the game explicitly says like it would be more fun to do this.
Right.
And then enemies will also block you after a time to prevent you from being too spammy.
Yeah.
Although all that stuff I think is actually pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird though, because it doesn't, you know, times I would get into the combat, then I would, you know, I'd fight one guy and then I would have like a long series of very, very difficult kind of platforming challenges with like wall jumps and not just wall jumps, but like we had to cling to a wall, mm-hmm. because there's three surfaces of something that will kill you or three sides to a surface and one of them won't.
Right.
So you had to cling to that. So it definitely is leaning on that kind of, ultra hard platformer thing,
right,
which I think is probably not quite as good as you know, it's kind of neat as the combat, or at least as satisfying. So it kind of, there's like a weird kind of whiplash to it going back and forth between those two things that they just don't totally work for me. It's like a marriage that'll work. It's like a loveless marriage.
Yeah,
you know.
I think Dust Force takes those mechanics, like it takes tight platforming but with level design that's more focused on flow. Mm-hmm. And the aesthetic of it isn't, it's very pretty, but it isn't as like, as pulling as this one. Like I like that this is actual enemies and it has, you know, this horror H.P. Lovecraft aesthetic.
Mm-hmm.
Dust Force is all just like guys sweeping up leaves, which is cute, but I kind of wish this had more of an emphasis on the flow of the combat. And, I want more like groups of enemies and stuff. I know
sure.
it ramps up as you go on. I only got a couple levels in, but, sparsing out the enemies doesn't, there's nothing to it. Yeah. And when fighting one enemy is not very fun, fighting a bunch of enemies and getting them bashed into each other and making a bomb explode over here that tosses this guy into a saw blade over there, that's where the fun comes in.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's the thing too, is that like, and the platforming complexity ramps up way faster than the enemy, the fighting complexity does.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, kind of a bummer. I didn't get too far in it because it was too hard for me. Like, right. And the difficulty, you know, you'd think like, oh, how does the difficulty affect the platforming? Like, it does. It's like fewer spikes. And then the really kind of interesting, the one thing about this game that is actually super unique is the way that it handles save points or checkpoints, which is a resource you collect. Mm-hmm. So there's this like really cool risk reward thing. Like, it's, you know, imagine like coins. If you collect enough coins and can stop for a minute and take a breath, it'll create a checkpoint. But as you go, and as soon as like the third level, like when I talk about it ramping up difficulty too quick, I mean it. as soon as the third level, they start putting those coins in pretty dangerous areas. Yeah. So like if you want to, you know, you can either kind of do a relatively safe way through the entire level, not collecting the optional things. But if you fail at that relatively safe,
start all the way back
to the beginning.
Yep.
Or you can take some risks and actually create some checkpoints. It's like the inverse of Shovel Knight.
Yeah.
Where like Shovel Knight, you know, you
save by default, but if you take the
reward, yeah, right. You like you gain additional reward by sacrificing that security. Like the default is to get the checkpoints.
It definitely is a weird way to go about it. Like,
I think it's actually kind of good. Like it's interesting, you know, and it made like a couple parts where I was like, man, I could make that series of jumps to get enough, you know, save crystals, but like, geez, right. You know, like, right. is that worth it? But the thing is about that system, like, I think it's good and interesting. Again, I don't think it's kind of elegantly presented here, because what it means is if you decide to take that risk and you fail at it, you're just starting over anyway, and it's a bummer.
Right. And it's, you know, yeah, like, and with a high difficulty platformer like this, like Meat Boy's whole thing is, you know, you always start at the same spot, but the turnaround is really quick. And this has that quick turnaround. And it has this checkpoint system, which means that those leaps of death and stuff that you mentioned, and the fact that you're not going to make it through the level the first time because of all the obstacles in the way, those checkpoints are there to help you. You'll very quickly restart back at your last checkpoint. But if you have to risk your life in order to form a checkpoint, you're going to be more averse to it and frustrate yourself by starting over at the beginning so much.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely got a little bit more frustrated than I wanted to in this game, because it just like, you know, I was expecting the combat when it works is very empowering. Mm-hmm. I wasn't expecting something breezy, but I also wasn't, you know, expecting something quite as difficult.
Yeah.
But I will say that like, even Meat Boy, which like I like, I played Meat Boy and was like, oh, this is pretty good. You know, and then Isaac came along and was like life changing,
right.
You know, for me. So like, I'm not well suited to ultra difficult platformers.
Yeah, me neither. I mean, I definitely hit a wall on Meat Boy and stopped, but I very much appreciate both these games for what they do right.
Sure. Yeah, it is. I agree with that. Like, I think that what this does well is actually pretty neat, and I want to look up that speed run as well.
Yeah.
Something else I want to bring up too about the platforming is that it is has the same problem that Magical Cat Girl game has.
Mamadora?
No. The other anime cat girl game we played, the one where the powers combine.
Oh, yeah.
What? Why can I not?
Copy Kitty.
We just did that. Yeah. Copy Kitty. We didn't just do it. We did a live episode in between. But it has the same problem Copy Kitty does, where the levels have no sense of place, so it's easy to get lost in them.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, they're just bland, like, neon platforms with spikes and stuff. And, like, that kind of bums me out. It's not quite, like, wave-based combat like Copy Kitty. You're still trying to get from one end to another. Mm-hmm. So you can remember the twists and turns and things.
Yeah, there's a little bit more linearity to it.
But it's very bland level design.
Yeah, the level, you know, level design like isn't all that interesting. The backgrounds are, but the actual placement of objects and stuff in levels are not.
Yeah. I have no sense of like what this is in the world. Like, and it's supposed to be like a dreamscape thing. Yeah. You know, like she goes to sleep and goes and fights these monsters. Mm-hmm. Like, fair enough. But I just, you know, I like looking like, I'm like, oh, this is a church. This is a house.
Yeah.
This is a library. Like, I like that a lot. And that doesn't have to be restrictive as what like the actual platforms are. Like, if you look at something like Symphony of the Night, that library makes no sense.
Right.
You know, but it's just like, oh, this is a library.
Yeah.
I'm fighting library themed enemies and here are books and like I'm fighting books. And
absolutely.
You know, I think that's kind of great.
I'm with you.
Yeah. So this might have an amazing story. I didn't get to it, but I I'm glad I played it, and it's been on my, I had this on Steam forever. Yeah. So it's,
I think it's been in multiple bundles, and like I said, it's $2 right now. So if you enjoy that sort of difficult platformer and this has managed to slip under your radar, like check it out. It's definitely,
Definitely good. Like, yeah, it's basically free.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. So let's move on to Oxenfree.
Let's do it.
So Oxenfree is it's a adventure game developed by Night School Studios and was released January 15th, 2016. It's available on Windows, OS X, Xbox One, PS4, and Linux.
Indeed. And this is a studio that's made up of Telltale alum.
Mm-hmm.
And that DNA is all over it.
Adam Hines from Tales of the Borderlands. Yeah, that's it. So.
He's the lead, you know, he's the main guy who wrote this.
Mm-hmm.
And Tales from the Borderlands, like, I played the first episode of that and it's like cute.
Right.
A lot of people are like, oh, it's the best thing ever. Like, it's a pretty fun action adventure.
I'm sure it's the best of the Borderlands franchise.
100%. Like, it is by far the most tolerable thing with the words border and lands on them. But until like Land Border 3 comes out, right, or whatever. But it didn't encourage me to keep playing it. It wasn't like, I was like, oh, I can't wait to find out what happens to these characters.
Right.
You know, because every Telltale game has like the episode 2 drop off,
mm-hmm,
you know, and I feel like this is kind of some of that same philosophy. One of the goals in this is to create that kind of complete Telltale experience without leaning on the episodic nature. So there are no cliffhangers or anything like that. It's not it's all done in one story.
Yeah. Yep. Definitely has that emphasis on making dialogue decisions. But how that actually plays into the plot, we'll get to a little bit later, because that's definitely much less emphasized.
It's you know, there's not a there's a lot to talk about here.
Yeah.
So like let's get into it and just do the basics first.
Sure.
So yeah, so Oxenfree, you play a young lady,
mm-hmm,
whose brother has recently died, and you're going to an island to kind of do like they do kind of a getaway, like a bender.
Some hood rat shit.
Yes, you do some hood rat shit. It's you, your new stepbrother, a longtime friend, your brother's ex-girlfriend, I guess ex, I mean, still, you know, he died.
Yeah, your dead brother's ex-girlfriend.
Yes.
Who's also a classmate of yours, and her best friend.
And her friend,
right,
who is new. And you're on an island, you're going to just get up to some shit. However, you head into a cave on this island and end up tuning into something supernatural with a radio.
Yeah.
You know, it's not too much of a spoiler to say that then, you know, you are supernatural shit happens.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, storyline, what we can say without spoiling, we'll go into the storyline in a spoiler section, but there's some mechanics we can still talk about.
Absolutely.
A little bit, that are not spoilers. I guess it is worth saying though, that if you've heard other good things about this, if it sounds like something you would dig, it's a good time to like say that if it sounds like something you'd like, you should play it. Because I wouldn't want to play this if I knew everything that happened in it, really.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. Storyline threads are the point of the game. So if you're not there to continue the thread of the storyline, you're not going to enjoy it.
And for me, it became a thing whether if that storyline outweighs the kind of mechanical stuff I'm going to talk a lot of shit about here in a minute. For me, it didn't. Like, I don't like this game very much. Like, I thought it was, you know, it's fine. I don't hate myself that I spent this time with it, but I ended up being pretty irritated with it for a variety of reasons that we'll talk about.
Yeah, I think I'm maybe a little bit north of neutral on it. But it's definitely not. This has some real positive reception that I think I'm not quite on board with.
Yeah, this is a critically lauded game. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, you know, when I was kind of complaining about it on Twitter, are just like, you know, very much like, oh man, I loved it. And when I would press them about it, and not in like a dick way, like, oh, yeah, what'd you fucking like about it? But if somebody likes something I don't like, I want to know what they like about it.
Right.
You know, because like, I want to see if it unlocks the thing that I'm not getting.
Not to be an asshole, just to find out what you're missing. Yeah,
have a conversation, you know. And the people who did, like, it just comes down to whether the things that bother you or bothered me about it bothered you more than you liked the story,
right,
than you were touched by the story. And I didn't find the story that touching. Like, I found a couple parts of it pretty good, but I, you know, I was like, okay, this is pretty like a pretty average kind of narrative. Like, it's good, it's like well constructed and stuff, but it's like, you know, not mind blowing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like it's not Torment. You know, it's not a story that like is gonna I'm gonna take forward with me till the end of my days.
Right.
And then the actual mechanical quibbles and the way that story is told like interfered with it too much.
I can definitely feel some of your pain there for sure.
Yeah.
But so we'll talk a little bit more about mechanics before we get into a spoiler section. Just want to note that this is also on sale in the Steam fall sale that's going on right now for $5 total, which is pretty good.
And we're recording this like before the episode, like shortly before the episode comes out. So you'll be able to hit up that sale this weekend.
Yeah, absolutely.
So one of the things, one of the primary mechanics, and it's something I just want to, it's not a major mechanic, in terms of how it relates to the narrative, but it is a major mechanic in terms of what you're going to spend your time doing.
Time spent. Definitely.
One of the things is this radio, which I talked about. That's how you kind of tune into this otherworldly force.
Right.
Everything in this game that, substitutes. So it's not a puzzle game. You know, a lot of people talk about like puzzles in adventure games. Or puzzles in video games. There are almost zero puzzles in this game.
Right.
Like it is, you have, it's like an activity, you know, like you have this radio at certain points to do certain things, either to like invoke the supernatural force or unlock locks. And you have to tune this radio dial. And every time this happens, like it gets more complicated as you go. You have a limited bandwidth and you gain a better radio. Like you get an upgrade in this.
Yeah.
That has a wider bandwidth and it is just you slowly searching a radio dial.
Exactly.
And you spend so much time doing that. And it's no, like, there's no like, okay, if I figure out this puzzle, it tells me which frequency to go to. And there's not even like, you know, BioShock style, like, oh, if I go into this room, the frequency I need to go to, you know, need to use is on the written on the mirror backwards.
Right.
You know, it's just trial and error. Like it's just running the entire bandwidth.
Mm-hmm.
And you do this for every single like bit of interactivity in the game, really.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's very frequent.
And it just doesn't add like a thing.
No, and you know, you'll get accustomed to it to the point where you'll be like be able to scan through more quickly than you were at the beginning. You're still scanning through the whole band of the radio.
You know, and that would have been such an easy way to make this feel a little bit more of like there was something you had to kind of get the information as to where you're supposed to go or could even intuit it. Like, yes, you'd be able to scan everything and brute force it. But if you were paying attention, maybe you'd be able to do it a little bit quicker or something. Like there was a opportunity there, I think, to actually throw a little like, you know, game like into it. Like not again, I'm not trying to get into like what is a video game thing, because it's definitely a video game, but
right.
A little bit more gaminess. That would have been like, okay, I can save myself a little bit of time because I'm paying attention.
Yeah, totally.
You know, so that's a huge bummer for me. I hated that. The biggest thing this and this is a kind of mixed thing. I think this game does this well and kind of shitty. But the thing that another thing really people love about it other than the narrative is the dialogue in it.
Mm-hmm.
So what will happen, the actual bread and butter of this game is walking around this island with a companion having conversations.
Right.
The entire game is built or, you know, 80% of the game is built around this. So, paths between areas are huge and winding. So getting from one end of the screen to the other you'll be doubling back. You'll be like climbing up and down, you know, cliffs, takes a long time to make room for these conversations.
Exactly.
That's the idea. The dialogue I think does feel like relatively natural.
Mm-hmm.
Even if all the characters are like super snarky.
Well, but like after the beginning, like the start of the game, like I care so fucking little about what any of you guys are talking about at the start of this game, because they're just trying to build them up as, you know, normal teens and stuff, which I understand helps grow to the rest of the game, but it's so fucking boring in the beginning.
It is really bad because I'm not into teens.
Yeah, no, I'm not, like, not a fan of teens.
I'm just not super into them. And like, I get there are a lot of people who I think really like this. Like, you know, people who are kind of into indie stuff really romanticize this period of life more than maybe I do.
Could be.
Or, you know, I think that's a thing where like there are people who are just like, man, like real teens.
Yeah, and just to more me, nostalgia teen, for that period of life.
Yeah, like their figures are fun to me. You know, and this was not relatable to me. Like I didn't have like, oh man, me and my friends would go to the beach and make quips at each other for like an hour straight. Everyone is so, there's a little bit of that Aaron Sorkin, like everyone is ready with a, you know, something. It's not quite, I mean, maybe not like Aaron Sorkin. It's not like that kind of hyper real, but
Right. Everyone
is kind of a sarcastic jokester.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everyone is very like, I saw a reviewer compare, it's like Daria. But it's like five Darias.
Yeah, it's everyone's Daria. Daria, where everyone's Daria.
Yeah. like the sequel to Daria, like the Daria Oops, complex. Or, yeah. TM Daria. So I think that's actually pretty good. The way that it kind of flows once you get into it, once you get past that initial hump.
Totally. Yeah. I'm with you there.
Yeah. The thing I don't like about it is, one, you have like a split second to choose your response.
Yeah. Yeah.
What is up with that?
That's weird. I think I saw someone in Slack try and say like, they're trying to encourage you to talk over, to make the dialogue seem more natural. You know, people do talk over each other a little bit, or they respond fairly quickly because they're thinking about what the person is saying the whole time. But there's so many times where I'm like, I'm so used to video games, I want them to finish their thought so that I know what I want to respond with.
Or like, heaven forbid, I actually get invested in what they're talking about. You know, like, heaven forbid, like, I actually start to like them as characters.
Yeah.
And want to know what they have to say, you know, especially when it gets to like the weird kind of supernatural elements, it might be important what they're saying.
Yeah.
You know, so my instinct is to listen, but you can't, like, you have to kind of cut people off or just be like, absolutely right on the trigger. And I definitely misanswered some things.
Mm-hmm.
The three different color, I guess I didn't know this until after I played it, but there are three different colors, your responses. Two of them look exactly the same to me.
Oh, I didn't do that in
games. Like, just a colorblind, it's not even like colorblind mode. You just have to like, you have to use high contrast colors. Yeah, the top one and the right one look identical to me in color, but they correspond to different tacks.
I didn't even notice. If it was color coordinated, it completely passed my brain entirely. So that's definitely not just you.
Yeah, it's you don't have to. You can also just read the content, but that is also slower, you know, if you're trying to jump in there real quick, you know.
Yeah, I never discerned that. That's crazy.
So that was a little bit annoying.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest thing with the dialogue though was that like they aren't timed well and they don't cross screens. So like you can get to, you know, the game knows where you're going. It has an illusion of non-linearity, but it's not.
Right.
You know, like you have set tasks.
It's certainly linear. Yeah.
You have one kind of major choice where like you can, you know, choose who to save at a certain point,
mm-hmm.
Between the other person. I did one. I don't know what happens if you do the other. But other than that, like for the most part, it's pretty linear. But the game doesn't like match those dialogue conversations to equal the amount of time it takes to go from one side of the screen to the other.
Yeah.
So like what can happen is either you finish a very short conversation and then just have, you know, a couple minutes of just like very slow traversal over this island, or you get to the end of the screen and you just have to stand there and finish talking, because if you go to the next side of the screen, the conversation will end.
Yeah. They should have let it continue on through next screen.
100%.
And yeah. I was trying to play it quickly, and like I was purposely getting to the end of screens before the dialogue's over. I'm like, this is just flavor text, this conversation. Yeah. I'm not gonna wait for this.
No, I wasn't invested enough to like want every little bit.
Yeah.
There's a little side thing about collecting letters. Fuck you.
Yeah. There's collecting letters and there's also like rocks, like those little rock piles.
Yeah.
That if you tune your fucking radio rocks, you'll get little messages.
We have to get over like video games trying to get you to explore their boring worlds by just sprinkling them with collectibles.
Collectathons is dumb. Yeah.
Yeah. Like we just have to get over that. Like, get the true ending by like really exploring our world. How about you make a world that's fucking worth exploring? And like, I'll just do it.
I think luckily it doesn't actually play into the ending. It's just more flavor text you can get. So that's good. But
there's a lot of endings to this. I don't know. You could be right. I thought it did though.
I could be wrong.
Yeah, there's several different endings, but you also could be right. I don't know. So that's the big thing I think with the dialogue, as an issue, and those are the mechanics. Like, other than just like that traversal,
is not very fun.
It gives you a map that I find pretty frustrating because there are so many switchbacks. Like, it's hard to know the direct place.
Yeah,
you know, the direct way to go.
I ran into that a couple times. It's not too bad. Generally, it's like, okay, if I'm in this area and I find a route left, I'm gonna end up in the area that's to the left of this one. But there's definitely a couple spots where if you have to take the high road and then go left to get to this area, or the low road and then go left to get to this area. And those ones are annoying.
It's not a huge deal if like traversing wasn't so boring.
Wasn't slow.
Your characters walk slower than any teen I've ever seen. Like, they have energy, guys. Like, you know, I understand Daria wasn't in a hurry to get anywhere, but like these kids are under a supernatural threat. Why aren't they like in a light jog?
Right.
You know, they just move very, very slow.
Yeah. And it picks up when they're not talking.
Yeah.
Which makes me wish I could just be like, nah, like, I don't want this conversation. Yeah,
please just be quiet. Let me like, I, for a game that like, I don't think is without merit, I wanted this to end so badly. Like the entire time I was playing it, I'm like, end. There should be a, like, once you're just like, so can you imagine like going around and trying to collect all the things without this, there's no fast travel, which I get like, you know, they want to have room for these conversations. It's not trying to be very video gamey, but like, at the first time I took one of those wrong turns, I got to the end of one of these diverticula and was just like, oh, I went the wrong way. I have to go all the way back.
Right.
Like I wanted to quit. Like I was so cranky about it. And I'm like, oh, if I open the map, maybe I can go back to that crossroad or something.
Nope.
And my guys didn't say anything on the way back, 'cause they had already like said their stuff on the way there. So like just watching two little dolls walk across a landscape forever. And when I say forever, it's like 5 minutes to go from what, you know, but 5 minutes is a long time for non-interactive, boring navigation.
Yeah, I had a problem with it too at the very beginning. When I first started it up, I was at the beach, right, when you do the cave stuff. And mm-hmm. I was like, okay, well, I need to go do something. So I, right after, and this is the very beginning, so I'm not spoiling everything, but right after the stepbrother enters the cave, I was like, okay, well, I'm going to stop here. And I shut the game down and started it back up next time. And it's at the very fucking beginning of that beach scene. I didn't realize it only saves on screen transitions.
It doesn't even save on screen transitions. It does not autosave often. Like it's autosaves way less than you think it does. So I ended up having to redo a large portion.
Yeah. I was so annoyed.
Yeah. So, I mean, those are the mechanics, mm-hmm. right? Like that's what you're doing and you're going through this narrative. I don't know if there's much else that can be said without going into the narrative.
I don't think so. I think we will do some wrap up here and we'll come back with a spoiler section and talk more about the story, which is the good part of this game. So like,
yeah, it's going to be more positive. I have some issues with it, but not nearly as many as I do with how it's presented.
Absolutely. So, you know, we're negative Nancy's here, but there's more positive things to say after the break, but also don't listen to it if you want to play this game.
Yes.
All right. So yeah, some admin stuff real quick. If you like the show and want to support us, the best way to do that is patreon.com/duckfeedtv. Mm-hmm. There you can throw us a couple bucks a month and get access to early access feeds or our Slack channel or physical goodies.
Mm-hmm.
That helps us out a lot. That's our main source of keeping this all afloat. You can also give us ratings and reviews on iTunes. That also helps spread our audience around. And if you have a game you'd like to suggest, or just want to interact with us, we're on facebook.com/checkitoutcomrade or on Twitter @comradepodcast. And there's a suggestion form on duckfeed.tv/contact. I think there might be one on checkitoutcomrade.com, but I'm not positive.
One or the other.
Yeah.
You can always go to the contact form.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's more or less it. And then tell people.
Yeah.
If you think they would like it.
Tell your friends.
Tell your friends.
Tell your family over the Thanksgiving. No, this is too late. Exactly. Sorry.
Yeah. Tell them over Christmas.
Yeah.
And then this is also the first time. So we're announcing it after we do our episode on Tyranny. We're going to take a hiatus, mm-hmm. which we do like a holiday hiatus to kind of refresh and get ahead on some games. Thank you to everybody who donated to DuckStream. Those people who donated games, if you have not answered the email I sent you yet, please do. Send us an email and let us know what game you want us to cover.
Yep, because we'll be kicking off when we come back next year. We will be kicking off with the dictated games.
Yes.
Unless Afterbirth Plus comes out, which then we might start with that and then move on to the Comrade Dictator games.
Yes. And we should also say that the we're not going to pair those probably because they tend to be longer and meatier. So we'll probably be putting those. We're not going to pair them with other fan mandated games.
Right. So, yeah, each one will be one dictated game and one potato game we pick up from elsewhere.
Yeah. So, that's probably it.
Yep. All right. So a little ditty here and we'll come back with some more about Oxenfree.
All right.
Okay.
Yeah. So the thing you're dealing with in this game,
mm-hmm.
like the supernatural threat, are ghosts.
Yes.
Of people who died in a submarine.
That is correct.
On the island. And the coolest part of this game and how it tells its story, the thing I didn't want to, you know, spoil, other than just the narrative, is as you're going through, you can get kind of caught in these time loops.
Yes.
Like the ghosts have these time powers for some reason. And what they can do is it makes everything have this kind of VHS aesthetic mm-hmm. to it that I think is actually kind of cool.
Yeah.
It reminded me of, and this is a cliche thing that's not fashionable, but it reminded me of like the old Slender Man YouTubes, where like when he would show up, you'd get these screen tears yeah, and stuff.
It was interesting when it first came out.
Yeah, exactly. Like it's still a cool idea.
Yeah.
You know, and that's pretty neat. I like that bit of the story.
And what else is the possession is good about when the story? The possession with the other people too, as a means of speaking through them. Is another aspect that ghosts have, and that tends to play out pretty interestingly.
Yeah, yeah, they possess your friends and companions, and
sometimes you,
and sometimes you, and kind of say things, you know, speak through you, and kind of the game part of this, other than the personal story, which is about this grief, you know, with your brother, is about figuring out what these ghosts want, kind of bargaining with them. Interacting with them and figuring out how to, you know, you essentially just have to get off the island
yeah.
itself, but getting past them so you can do so, because they do have these time powers and stuff.
They are trying to stop you from leaving the island for sure.
It should be noted, like, if you're listening to this and think that is going to be kind of front and center, it's not. And one of the things I think is kind of weird about this game is that you spend most of your time just kind of shooting the shit. Like nobody is scared enough. For me in this game, like, you start off kind of scared, mm-hmm. but then you start getting into petty bullshit, like, pretty quick, you know, like, oh, I thought you said that, you know, you thought I was trustworthy, but now you don't. Like, they get into teen speak real fast. One of the kids, starts, you know, does an irresponsible amount of drugs. It's played for a comic relief, yeah. in it. And it's like, there's fucking ghosts, yeah, you know, yeah. Be terrified. The first what are you
time,
doing?
Why the fuck would you ever do that a second time when there's ghosts? Or at that point, I guess it's not like they're not sure what's going on. There's weird stuff happening, but still, why the fuck would you do that?
You might have to operate heavy machinery, like you fucking. And again, like, I can hear people listening to this, like, oh, they're teens, they're gonna do stupid shit. But it's just like when I was a teen, I wasn't immune to fear.
Yeah, when I was scared, I fucking
I was scared.
Grew like, the fuck up real quick.
Yeah, yeah, fear makes adults of us all, you know. So like, there's a little bit of in general like. Lack of stakes for me in the whole way, like my characters, there's a disconnect in how my characters react, you know, even if I'm not choosing like the jokey option, like like sometimes there are like two jokey options and one kind of flippant option, and there's no like, hey, I just need a minute, there are ghosts possessing, I'm not sure if we're gonna make it out of this alive.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like at a certain point in the game I was on the same level as the characters of like, God, when the fuck is, like, at this point, you guys are just annoying the piss out of us.
Yeah.
Like, no one's getting hurt, really. Like, after the first scares of someone actually getting hurt, you're like, oh, well, they're just fucking with us, and I just want this to end, right? The possession and the time loop stuff, I get them being sick of that, but it's it covers, like, almost the entirety of it, rather than just, like, you know, the latter half of realization about what they're actually capable of.
Well, it's also, and something that I think is a truism, I think is like Paul O'Brien, who's a comics critic guy who's the first person I heard say this, but I think it a lot, is that it's not an excuse for badness in your product that characters talk about it. You know, it's like if characters are sitting around criticizing the plot, that doesn't excuse the plot being bad.
Right.
It's like actually an extremely bad sign that your thing is not very good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so like the fact that like, you know, the characters being like, hey, this is just actually really boring and tedious. Like, that doesn't make it not boring and tedious.
It's not quite to that level, but I see what you're getting at.
But the characters just being like, God, can we get on with it? There's literally a part where when you first find the first of the letters that are going to be like your quest item thing, your stepbrother is like, man, we got to find all these and get the story of the island. And there's an option your character can say is like, no, that sounds like a boring chore. And like, that's exactly what it sounds like. And you know, you better believe I said that, but like,
right.
The developers acknowledging that it would be boring does not make it not boring.
It definitely doesn't make the thing not boring. I mean, it's nice for the player as a comedic relief element, but sure. It doesn't,
but the other option could be like, yeah. Like, and especially this is, some of this like bad will I have, I'll admit, was wrapped up when I thought that was tied into an ending. So if that's not tied into an ending at all, then like, you know, that's a little bit more forgivable,
right?
You know,
and I could, I'm not entirely sure. I didn't go for any crazy endings or anything.
Yeah. To me, the stuff that worked in the story without like actually doing a bit by bit,
I don't think we have time for that even.
Yeah.
So.
Is the stuff when like you actually do, so you start kind of going back in time and being around your brother.
Mm-hmm.
And there's you're just kind of reliving things. You're, you know, time quaked, like quantum leaped back into yourself, essentially. And you're getting a chance to like to say goodbye or say the things you wanted to say to him, you know, since you didn't know he was going to die.
Right.
And that stuff was actually like pretty affecting. I like the relationship between the main character and her brother quite a bit.
I do too. Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought that stuff was pretty effective. I'm not sure I really buy into the choices that are put up. You kind of have choices about like how you want to treat people, which affects the ending in that you kind of get a brief wrap up that shows how everyone kind of feels about you at the end, which is kind of the main tie into a Telltale style deal there. Cause there's a lot of choices you're making throughout the game. And depending on those choices, they'll feel different ways about you at the end.
Yeah.
Those weren't super affecting for me, I don't think.
No, because I didn't care about anybody really except for the main character and the brother.
Right.
You know, like I didn't. The stepbrother is kind of okay. But the two other characters, like the little comic relief friend guy, felt unreal to me.
Yeah, Ren's annoying shit.
Ren is really bad. And then the character who is your brother's ex-girlfriend is just like a psychopath. And you can call her that, you know, thank goodness. But she's unsympathetic to an extreme. And then her friend was like a non-character.
Yeah. So she's the Daria of the Darias.
Yeah. Just like Daria Inception.
Yeah.
So really it was just like a little bit my character and the stepbrother, and then my character and the memories of her brother.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, you know, that's good. It's a role playing game. Like you get to actually, like you get to do some role playing in it.
Right.
You can do more than just like see how your friends care about each other though, because I resurrected my brother.
Yeah. So that's the one interesting thing. I did not do that. So I'm interested, in how that played out. Cause you can replace the stepbrother in the current time with your actual dead brother.
By encouraging your dead brother so you're not actually like, they're not visions. You're actually going back in time and changing what you said.
Exactly. Yeah.
However, there's like a kind of an implication that you're stuck in like a loop, because when you try to restart with your stepbrother gone and your brother back, you are going back to the island.
There's an implication of that regardless.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, regardless whether you brought him back, it is kind of a cycle, you know, and I read a little bit about the endings and stuff like that. So which means it has like a new game plus, which like, there is way too much downtime.
Why would I give a fuck to play this a second time?
There's way too much downtime to play this more than once. Like, it's kind of, when I was complaining about it, some people were saying that it's really similar in structure to like a visual novel, and like that genre does that bullshit too, where like you get to one ending and it says, well, that wasn't your real ending, play the entire thing again and make slightly different choices to kind of rush him on the story. And that, like, I don't want to play a game like over and over and over.
I don't have time for that. Yeah, I only get to be alive for so long.
Yeah, we're all gonna die. Visual novels, get this through your head. There's a thing that a lot of people were impressed with that I am angry about, is there's a weird little Dark Souls element to this where you can see a ghost of yourself from other realities that suggest things to you.
Yeah. I did not care.
No, but it doesn't work. It's like a novelty, because what they can do is they can give you advice at certain, those kind of junctions we talked about that give you the ending.
Mm-hmm.
They can give you advice similar to like soapstone messages in Dark Souls. There's no way to know if they are being sincere or not.
If they're helping you towards a better ending or not.
Or helping you. There's no like rating system, even though the rating system in Dark Souls thing is not particularly, you know, noteworthy, because you can't tell which direction it's in. But like, there's no rating or anything like that. So it's just kind of a way to like either encourage or fuck with people. But since I don't know the actual tactical thing, you know, the right thing to do is ignore them. You know, like they don't actually have an impact on your play.
Right.
Other than the fact that you can get kind of fucked out of the ending you want the first time through when you don't realize that's what's happening. And then you know, next time you ignore them.
Well, and the other thing is when you get to record yours for other players to see, you don't know the impact of your choices yet.
Yeah, that's true. You're doing that before the actual ending.
Right.
So, like, I couldn't tell somebody the things that would bring my brother back to life because I don't know what brought my brother back to life at that point. It's made for, like, multiple playthroughs. Like, it's like, I know what the choices are. I'm going to go through this again and either try to fuck people's games up or steer them towards the best ending.
But there's not enough knowledge about...
There's no information.
Yeah, there's no way to know that that's what it's doing.
Yeah, they have no information. So if they're playing on their first time, they might get fooled. If they're playing on their second time, they don't know if... You know, either they already know the answer, so they know what to do, or they know enough to know that you could be trying to fool them and you should ignore it.
Right.
So it's like, it's a novelty. It's kind of clever, but the people who... I saw who were like kind of blown away by that. We're like, oh, that was another person. Like, you know, there's Dark Souls. We just did a live episode on Journey.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, this is done so much better by other games.
Like infinitely better.
Yeah. Like, this, it's such a throwaway in this.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just amazing the credit this game has kind of received. I don't, you know, it's fine. It doesn't take anything.
I don't hate it. Like I said, I'm slightly north of neutral on it, I think.
Yeah. I might be like neutral in it, but it's polarizing where like the things I liked, like the actual story with the brother, like some of the dialogue that I ended up liking was actually, you know, in some of the actual creepy parts, there are a couple of, it's the other thing too, is like, this is a horror game junior. Like, it is not meant to be scary at all.
Right.
But some of the parts that are actually a little bit unnerving, I liked. Mm-hmm. And then there's a whole, you know, I like those things. And then a huge host of things I disliked really strongly. So there's no, oh, the whole thing was average. It's a collection of some things I liked, probably more things I disliked.
Right.
But it's not, you know, nothing in it is like, oh, this, you know, this is a 7 out of 10. It's like, it's a 7 out of 10 in aggregate.
Right.
But there, if those things that are utter failures, if those are important to you, I can't recommend it. You know, like if you are sensitive to pacing, you know, like if something being slow or wasting your time or being paced slowly makes you furious, like it does for me, you will not have a real good time.
Yeah.
I feel like. So, yeah. I mean, I'm curious, you know, I'm curious what the studio does. I'm frustrated when a game like this gets like tons of accolades without, you know, because it's, I feel like their follow-up is going to be like the same kind of thing, like a very similar game, you know, without fixing any of this stuff.
Right.
You know, like, I mean, I could be wrong about that, but
it's,
like,
I mean, it's not like it's been, you know, 10 out of 10 everywhere. It's definitely, it's been met
a lot
with
of major awards.
Yeah, but it's like, still like major publications are giving it, you know, sevens and eights.
I guess that's true. So maybe they'll take a look and see what they could do better. You know, it's what you think about a lot with like Firewatch is like, I just want, you know, that game, it got a lot of like love, but I would love for the people who made it, for whatever their follow-up is, to like, you know, take some of the criticism of it to heart.
Yeah.
You know, because it's hard to, this show more than any other show on the network puts me in the position of criticizing things that are politically in a good space.
Mm-hmm.
So you end up with things like that are really well loved. You know, the people who I love Firewatch, people who I love Undertale.
Right.
You know, and people who hate those games, some of them are just shitty trolls.
Yeah.
You know, so like the developers of those games, like I can imagine the Undertale guy being like, I don't need to do anything different because everyone who loves this game loves it. Everyone who hates it is just somebody who hates the fact that it's a nonviolent,
right,
you know, charming game instead of Wolfenstein. But I don't hate it because of that reason. I hate it, you know, I didn't like it for other reasons. Like there's
right.
The actual criticism to be found out there, you know, even if it is, if most people are just being shitheads. You know, so hopefully the people who make these kind of like indie darlings that are flawed, but get wrongly criticized, actually seek out the correct criticism as well.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm totally with you there.
Anywho, thanks everybody for listening.
Yeah.
And good.
We'll see you next time.